You're listening to the Hour of the Time, across America and around the world. I'm William Cooper. Now that is spiritual, and you don't have to meet behind closed doors in secret to feel it, which is what the Illumined Ones claim to be doing. Poor Tom Valentine just doesn't get the message, folks. I listened to him Thursday night as he whined and cried about the broadcast we did on the Hour of the Time on Wednesday the night before. He claimed that he had been unjustly attacked by someone that he knew nothing about, and that I was really angry because he didn't treat me too well during an interview that took place way back in 1989. All of that, folks, was lies, total lies. He claimed that he knew nothing whatsoever about me. That is a lie also. You see, Tom Valentine has been attacking me personally for years. Those of you who listen to his program regularly know that. People have called in, asked him about William Cooper. And he has told people that I am not credible, that I'm some kind of a bullshit artist. On Tuesday night, June the 8th, he made this statement. William Cooper is a CIA disinformation agent. When one of my CAGI members, I don't know which one, I don't know who it was, called in to offer some help to his guest who felt threatened by agencies of the federal government. Tom Valentine asked him about the organization that was offering the help, and he said it's William Cooper's organization, the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, at which point Tom Valentine said, William Cooper is a CIA disinformation agent. Now, if you don't believe that, folks, you get the tape of Radio Free America for Tuesday night, June the 8th, and you will see that Tom Valentine is just not the innocent little fellow that he's pretending to be. And he knows that if no one draws your attention to it, you'll go away thinking that what he told you was correct. Well, you see, I can't allow that because I am not a CIA disinformation agent. Could not be, would not be, will never be. And my message to Tom Valentine is prove it or apologize. Prove it or apologize. His statement that I made an unwarranted attack on him was also a lie, because I did not attack Tom Valentine, folks, and you all know it. You all know it. You all listened. All I did was read for 1 hour his own words from a book entitled 5-5-2000, Ice, the Ultimate Disaster, written by Richard W. Noone, spelled N-O-O-N-E. During which time, Tom Valentine disclosed that he is a member of the Brotherhood, the Illuminati, that his God is really Lucifer, that he believes in salvation by works, and I could go on and on and on and on. He also believes in a master race, the Hyksos, or Hexos, as he calls them. And the rest of us are just animals. This is the typical Illuminati line. By his own words, folks, all I did was read you his own words. The reference to communism at the end of the broadcast was also from his own words. Now, I forget the exact hour of Radio Free America where he stated this, but I was listening within the last 3 months. Tom Valentine, during the last hour, I believe, of a broadcast of Radio Free America, talked about how, in his earlier days, he had been enamored with communism. Communism. And then at one time, he had been a communist. His own words. I didn't make it up. You can go back and search through his tapes, and unless he gets those tapes and destroys them before you get there, you will hear him say that. Now, he claims that he's a Christian. I doubt it very seriously. Priests, adepts, highly degreed individuals of the mystery school, like leopards, do not change their spots. However, a few throughout history have. So until we can prove otherwise, I will give Mr. Valentine the benefit of the doubt, and maybe he has become a Christian. But until someone who really knows what being a Christian is all about asks him some very pertinent questions and gets the right answers in return, that question is still open as to not whether Tom Valentine is really Christian. I will show you or demonstrate to you how these people mask their true identity and what their true beliefs are. We know that George Bush is a member of the Illuminati and was initiated by lying naked in a tomb with a ribbon tied around his genitalia at Yale University in the Skull and Bones, where he ritualistically died and was born again and given a new name. And at a press conference, when a reporter asked George Bush if he was a Christian, this was George Bush's answer, quote, If you are asking if I have been born again, the answer is yes, unquote. And the sheeple took this to mean that, yes, he was a Christian. The Illuminati do believe in Christ, the Christ consciousness. They believe that anyone can become Christ. In fact, they believe anyone can become God. They believe Christ is an office. They believe that Christ was a teacher, a man, was not the Son of God, was not God, had no divinity whatsoever, was not resurrected, did not ascend unto heaven to sit at the right hand of his Father. And you cannot believe anything that these people say. You see, once Tom Valentine revealed in his own words in 5-5-2000 that he is a member of the Brotherhood, you have to understand that the knowledge that he has of the esoteric belief system of the Brotherhood indicates that he is a highly degreed adept or priest of the Brotherhood, and that he has taken many, many oaths swearing that he will never reveal the secrets upon pain of death, and that he will never betray another member of the Brotherhood upon pain of death. I'm going to read you one of those oaths now. In fact, I'll read you two of those oaths so that you'll see that the oaths get more serious the farther up the ladder one obtains. Listen very closely. I'm not going to tell you which degree this is, but I will tell you it's taken out of Duncan's Ritual of Freemasonry. Also on Thursday night, Tom Valentine stated that he had left the Stell Group, but he did not deny that he is a Freemason or a member of the Brotherhood. You see, there are many branches of the Illuminati, and they have many different names. Just because Tom Valentine left the Stell Group does not mean that he has deserted the Brotherhood. Now, you'd better understand that. The purpose of that broadcast that we did last Wednesday night was not to attack Tom Valentine at all. The purpose of that broadcast was to let you know who he is, so that when you hear him say that William Cooper is a CIA disinformation agent, you can then judge his reasons and his agenda for saying that a little bit better than you could before you knew that information. And I intentionally used only his words and no other words to show you who he is. I did not make up anything. Nothing came off the top of my head. I made no accusations. I merely read to you his own words. And those words convicted Tom Valentine, not William Cooper. And I have to say this also, folks. If he had not blatantly and with no reason attacked me and accused me of being a CIA disinformation agent, that program would never have been necessary, because on this program, my admonition to everyone is to listen to everyone, read everything, believe nothing until you have investigated and found the truth in your own research. So I care not who people are, what organizations they belong to, what religion they practice, for the Constitution guarantees us protection of those rights, including the rights of Tom Valentine to worship Lucifer or Jesus Christ or Buddha if he wants to. We have no complaint with that here. But in light of the accusation he made against me, it was absolutely necessary that the listening audience know who Tom Valentine is, what he really believes, what his hidden agenda is, so that you can judge his statement in the light of the truth. Now I'm going to read to you two oaths, ladies and gentlemen, taken from Duncan's Masonic Ritual and Monitor, or Guide to the Three Symbolic Degrees of the Ancient York Rite, and to the degrees of Mark Master, Past Master, Most Excellent Master, and the Royal Ark, by Malcolm C. Duncan, explained and interpreted by copious notes and numerous engravings, third edition, with additions and corrections, printed by the David McKay Company, Incorporated of New York, which is the Freemason Publishing Company. So, folks, this will open your eyes and your ears, and you will realize how you're deceived and how these people must lie to you when you ask them for answers. They cannot give them to you and will not. I quote directly from Duncan's. I, and whoever it is states their name, of my own free will and accord, in presence of Almighty God and this lodge of most excellent Master Masons, erected to him and dedicated to King Solomon, do hereby and hereon most solemnly and sincerely promise and swear, in addition to my former obligations, that I will not give the secrets of most excellent master to any one of an inferior degree, nor to any person in the known world, except it be to a true and lawful brother of this degree, and within the body of a just and lawfully constituted lodge of such, and not unto him nor them whom I shall hear so to be, but unto him and them only whom I shall find so to be, after strict trial and due examination, our lawful information. Furthermore, do I promise and swear that I will obey all regular signs and summonses handed, sent, are thrown to me from a brother of this degree, or from the body of a just and lawful constituted lodge of such, provided it be within the length of my cable toe. Furthermore, do I promise and swear that I will support the Constitution of the General Grand Royal Ark Chapter of the United States, also that of the Grand Chapter of this state under which this lodge is held, and conform to all the bylaws, rules, and regulations of this or any other lodge of which I may hereafter become a member. Furthermore, do I promise and swear that I will aid and assist all poor and indigent brethren of this degree, their widows and orphans, wheresoever dispersed around the globe, as far as in my power, without injuring myself or family. Furthermore, do I promise and swear that the secrets of a brother of this degree, given to me in charge as such, and I knowing them to be such, shall remain as secret and inviolable in my breast as in his own, murder and treason excepted, and the same left to my own free will and choice. Furthermore, do I promise and swear that I will not wrong this lodge of most excellent Master Masons, nor a brother of this degree, to the value of anything, knowingly, myself, nor suffer it to be done by others if in my power to prevent it. Furthermore, do I promise and swear that I will dispense light and knowledge to all ignorant and uninformed brethren at all times, as far as is in my power, without material injury to myself or family. To all which I do most solemnly swear, with a fixed and steady purpose of mind in me to keep and perform the same, binding myself under no less penalty than to have my breast torn open and my heart and vitals taken from thence and exposed to rot on the dunghill, if ever I violate any part of this my solemn oath or obligation of a most excellent Master Mason, so help me God and keep me steadfast in the due performance of the same. Master, to the candidate, detach your hands and kiss the book 6 times. The candidate obeys. You will now rise and receive from me the sign, grip, and word of a most excellent Master Mason. Now, folks, there's several things in this oath you need to know. Number one, they swear, they pledge. This is unbelievable that they do this. They pledge. Let me read this to you. Furthermore, do I promise and swear that the secrets of a brother of this degree, given to me in charge as such, and I knowingly them to be such, shall remain as secret and inviolable in my breast as in his own, murder and treason excepted, and the same left to my own free will and choice. So even if he knows that a fellow brother has committed murder or treason, he can, of his own free will, decide not to inform anyone. And anything other than murder and treason, he is bound by solemn oath not to divulge and to protect and help that brother of the brotherhood of the order in every way possible. Now, let me give you the oath of the next degree, which excerpts from it the part about murder and treason accepted, and the same left to my own free will and choice, and makes it mandatory that no matter what the brother does, he is to be protected, helped, aided, and abetted, and his secrets are to be kept. And here is that oath. I, and the person gives their name, of my own free will and accord, in presence of Almighty God in this chapter of Royal Archmasons erected to God and dedicated to Zerubbabel, do hereby and hereon most solemnly and sincerely promise and swear, in addition to my former obligations, that I will not reveal the secrets of this degree to any of an inferior degree, nor to any being in the known world, except it be to a true and lawful companion Royal Archmason, or within the body of a just and legally constituted chapter of such, and never unto him or them whom I shall hear to be, but to him and them only whom I shall find so to be, after strict trial and due examination or lawful information given. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not wrong this chapter of Royal Archmasons, or a companion of this degree, out of the value of anything, myself, nor suffer it to be done by others, if in my power to prevent it. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not reveal the key to the ineffable characters of this degree, nor retain it in my possession, but will destroy it whenever it comes to my sight. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not speak the grand omnific Royal Ark word, which I shall hereafter receive in any manner, except in that in which I shall receive it, which will be in the presence of three companions, Royal Ark Masons, myself making one of the number, and then by three times three under a living ark, and at low breath. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not be at the exaltation of candidates in a clandestine chapter, nor converse upon the secrets of this degree with a clandestine maid masons, or with one who has been expelled or suspended while under that sentence. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not assist or be present at the exaltation of a candidate to this degree who has not received the degrees of entered apprentice, fellow craft, master mason, mark master, past master, and most excellent master. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not be at the exaltation of more nor less than three candidates at one and the same time. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not be at the forming or opening of a chapter of Royal Ark Masons unless there be present nine Royal Ark Masons, myself making one of that number. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not speak evil of a companion Royal Archmason behind his back nor before his face, but will apprise him of all approaching danger if in my power. I furthermore promise and swear that I will support the Constitution of the General Grand Royal Ark Chapter of the United States of America, together with that of the Grand Chapter of this state under which this chapter is holden, that I will stand to and abide by all the bylaws, rules, and regulations of this chapter or of any other chapter of which I may hereafter become a member. I furthermore promise and swear that I will answer and obey all due signs and summonses handed, sent, or thrown to me from a chapter of Royal Ark Masons or from a companion Royal Ark Mason if within my length, the length of my cable toe. I furthermore promise and swear that I will not strike a companion Royal Ark Mason so as to draw his blood in anger. I furthermore promise and swear that I will employ a companion Royal Ark Mason in preference to any other person of equal qualifications. I furthermore promise and swear that I will assist a companion Royal Ark Mason when I see him engaged in any difficulty, and will espouse his cause so far as to extricate him from the same, whether he be right or wrong. I furthermore promise and swear that I will keep all the secrets of a companion Royal Ark Mason when communicated to me as such, or I knowing them to be such, without exceptions. I furthermore promise and swear that I will be aiding and assisting all poor and indigent companions, Royal Ark Masons, and their widows and orphans, wheresoever dispersed around the globe, they making application to me as such, and I finding them worthy, and can do it without any material injury to myself or family. To all of which I most solemnly and sincerely promise and swear, with a firm and steadfast resolution to keep and perform the same, without any equivocation, mental reservation, or self-evasion of mind in me whatever, binding myself under no less penalty than to have my skull smote off and my brains exposed to the scorching rays of the meridian sun, should I knowingly or willfully violate or transgress any part of this, my solemn oath and obligation of a royal archmason, so help me God, and keep me steadfast in the due performance of the same. Principal Sojourner, kiss the book 7 times. The candidate kisses the book as directed. And there's more to the ceremony, but you have heard the pertinent facts. Now you know why some people who are better qualified or equally qualified go apply for a job and they don't get it. Some other guy does because he's a Freemason. Now you know why if you go into court facing a Freemason and the judge is a Freemason, you've lost the case before you can even present it. And on and on and on and on. And you'll notice that in the last oath, there is no qualification as to murder or treason, but it says he must aid his brother Mason with no exceptions, whether he be right or wrong. You also learned that the penalty for revealing the secrets or breaking their oath is death. Death. Now, these Masons can tell you that these are just frivolous oaths, part of an ancient ritual, and they don't mean anything. And if you're stupid enough to believe that, then go right ahead. Go right ahead. You see, I know that grown men don't take frivolous oaths. And you'll notice the reference to God in those oaths. Their God is not the same God that most of us believe to be God. Their God is Lucifer. Lucifer, who set man free from the Garden of Eden with the gift of intellect, the light, the sun. Lucifer, the mind. The concept that man himself will become God. I hope you all understand the implications of what you've learned tonight and what you'll continue to learn as you listen to the hour of the time. I wish Tom Valentine well. I wish everybody in the world well. I want all the ills that have plagued mankind to disappear from this earth, and I would like to see man live peacefully with other men. I would like to see peace and goodwill reign upon the earth. But I'm not stupid, folks. I know that man is inherently flawed, and unless we guard our liberties and our freedoms, and unless we understand who the enemy is and guard against usurpation of those things that we consider to be worthwhile, then we will lose them. We will lose them. The ancient goal of the mystery religion of Babylon to create a utopia upon the face of this earth is a worthy ideal to strive for, but in reality, it will not and cannot work until man matures, until every person becomes responsible and educated, until secrets and deception and manipulations disappear from the earth, until dogma disappears. Don't ever believe anything unless you can prove it's true, folks. Anything at all. I don't care what it is. If you do, you are at the mercy. You are at the mercy of whoever is convincing you that you should believe it. You'll be a puppet at the end of someone's string. And to Mr. Tom Valentine, if you don't want to experience another program like last Wednesday night on the Hour of the Time, then you shouldn't be calling other people names. And I'm going to say this again. You stated on Tuesday, June the 8th, that I, William Cooper, am a CIA disinformation agent. Either prove it or apologize. But in any case, don't throw stones when you're living in a glass house. It's time for our break, folks. Don't go away. I'll be right back after this very short pause. Hello, folks. This is William Cooper. I know that many of you out there are worried about the economic condition that you find yourselves in, and you're also getting increasingly upset at the turn that the economy of the United States of America is taking. And it's not just here in this country, it's around the world. I learned just how bad it really is when I took my trip to London and spoke at Wembley Arena. If you would like to find out some of the ways which you can save your assets and protect yourself and your family from what's coming, and if you're smart, you can see it. No one has to tell you. Call 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Talk to our friends at Swiss America Trading and ask them, if you're one of the first 200 callers, about the book by Harry Figger on Tackle the Debt. Will be sent to you free of charge. Also, if you mention my name, William Cooper, you'll receive a free newsletter on protecting your future. Folks, by protecting your future, you're protecting the future of this show and freedom for the world. All we're concerned about here is getting information out to everybody in the world to wake the sheeple, empower the people, and save freedom for the world. Swiss America Trading is our partner in this effort. And for them to remain a partner in this effort, they've got to have your calls and they've got to have your business. So if you think the Hour of the Time is an important show, if you think that you're getting real worth from this program, you need to call Swiss America Trading. You'll not only be supporting this program, folks, you will be taking positive steps, which you probably have not done up to this time, to protect your assets and save your family from tremendous financial hardships in the near future. Call 1-800-289-2646. Do it right now. 1-800-289-2646. Ask for Harry Figge's pamphlet on Tackle the Debt. Also mention my name, William Cooper, for a free newsletter on protecting your future. Remember, by protecting your future, you're protecting the future of this show, The Hour of the Time, and freedom for the world. This is the last conduit for truth in media upon the face of this earth, bar none. If you haven't figured that out yet, you better sit down and do some serious thinking. Have you fallen into the trap of liking someone and then believing they can't be wrong because you like them? You know, occasionally we're going to be wrong on this show, too, because we're human beings. But we're the only ones who will tell you that. We're the only ones who will tell you not to believe anything you hear here or anywhere else until you can prove it in your own research. We're the only ones trying to wake the sheeple and really empower the people, and we don't contradict ourselves on this show. You won't hear us have a guest who says one thing and hear us tell you that that thing is what we believe to be true, and then 2 weeks later have somebody on that says it's all a bunch of baloney and hear me say that it's all a bunch of baloney like you do on all the other shows. Doesn't happen here. If we're ever wrong, we'll be the first to tell you. But we will not be contradictory. We will not add to the confusion and the chaos. Ordo ab chaos is one of the methodologies of the mystery schools. You see, they control both sides. Freemasons run everything, including the Patriot Movement, folks. They are creating, very quickly, a state of chaos. And when anarchy begins to prevail, and society begins to tumble and crumble, they will step in, institute order, and form their one-world totalitarian socialist state. Just like Hitler did in Germany. Go back and study what happened in Germany during Hitler's rise to power, and you will see the same exact same thing is happening here now today. Never, never follow heroes, for heroes are figments of your imagination. Never, ever worship a leader. For then you will never have the ability to know when you are being fooled or when that leader is wrong. Now help yourself. Call 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-289-2646 and do it right now, folks. Do it right this moment. Remember, ask for Harry Figge's pamphlet, Tackle the Debt. Mention my name, William Cooper, and ask for the free newsletter on protecting your future. Do it now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. And you'll be glad that you did. In 1974, ladies and gentlemen, 1974, at sea on board the aircraft carrier USS Oriskany, CVA 34, I was sent down to the communications center to pick up a top secret SPCAT message and deliver it to the bridge. The message had already been decoded, and on the way to the bridge, I read the message. The message said, "Upon receipt, you are no longer to accept any orders from the White House." It was from the Joint Chiefs of Staff to the commanding officer, USS Oriskany, CVA 34, And the last part of the message says, acknowledge receipt. I took this message to the bridge where Commander Doherty was standing over the navigational plot. I handed it to him and I asked him, Commander Doherty, what are we going to do as this message violates the Constitution of the United States of America? He looked at me and he said, Cooper, we will wait and see if any orders come from the White House, and then we will make a decision. I wrote about this in my book, Behold a Pale Horse. I talked about it in my lectures in 1988 and 1989 for the first time. And people told me that I was out of my mind, that I was crazy. When asked about a military coup during the Nixon presidency, Fletcher Prouty ducked the issue and said, no, the coup took place when President Kennedy was assassinated. There were two coups, folks, and Fletcher Prouty knows it. Those of you who have seen my videotape of the lecture in Atlanta, Georgia, with the new Kennedy footage called The Sacrificed King, showing you what's really in Dealey Plaza, and how the movie JFK fooled everybody, and how actually Fletcher Prouty and Oliver Stone were laughing at the American people in that movie, then you know where Fletcher Prouty is coming from and why he made the statement that he did on Radio Free America. You also heard both Fletcher Prouty and Tom Valentine trying to cover up for the Freemasons, the Illuminati, the secret societies, and both of them were telling you, don't pursue that avenue of research, for they're not engaged in any conspiracy. Well, folks, I'm holding in my hands here a book entitled New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, written by William T. Still. And this book is copyrighted 1990. Now, I had disclosed to the public in lectures in 88 and 89 and 1990 everything I knew about the Nixon coup, that the rug was pulled out from under him, the military was ordered not to obey any orders from the White House, and of course the military controls communications, so even if the president wanted to send any orders to military units, he would not have been able to do it. In this book, William T. Still reveals what he knows about the Nixon coup. And I'm going to read you a portion of this so that you will understand. And I'm reading, quoting directly from his book. My curiosity about secret societies began in the fall of 1973. As a young aspiring reporter living near Washington, D.C., I stumbled across a startling story of political intrigue. Since then, I've slowly pursued this sometimes contradictory story, only gradually coming to understand its significance over the years. This book is the fruit of more than a decade of research that led inexorably into their shadowy realm. On about October 15, 1973, I was given a memorandum by my father, Lieutenant Colonel William L. Still, a retired Air Force officer, one of the architects of the military's defense communications network. On October 3, 1973, he was approached by an acquaintance, Joe Josephson, who claimed he had connections with the White House of President Richard M. Nixon. This acquaintance asked my father how he and his military friends would feel about a military takeover of the United States government. The atmosphere in Washington at that time was thick with political intrigue. The CIA stood accused of domestic spying at home and of coup d'etat making in Chile. The Watergate hearings had gone on throughout the summer, and now President Nixon was refusing to comply with court orders to surrender the White House tapes as evidence. The American Civil Liberties Union was taking out full-page ads in the New York Times urging impeachment of the president. My father was dumbfounded by the suggestion that a coup was afoot. Fortunately, he was able to conceal his shock long enough to learn some of the details from his associate, Mr. Josephson. Shortly thereafter, he wrote a memorandum detailing the incident and circulated it in military intelligence and FBI channels. This startling memorandum reads as follows. Memorandum for the record. Subject: rumor concerning planning for a military coup within the United States of America. Introduction. My name is William L. Still, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Air Force, retired. I am not an alarmist and consider myself to be intelligent, objective, and an analyst of above average capability. I am writing this statement only after careful consideration of its potential impact on both the country and myself. The following summary is a combination of fact, hearsay, and conjecture. I have limited the subjective data to those areas which I believe will aid in evaluating the source of the rumor and make no comment on the rumor itself. I have not included the names of pertinent personnel or organizations for their own protection. However, I will cooperate fully with any responsible investigators. A committee exists which is dedicated to the repeal of the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. Its goal is to place Mr. Nixon in the White House for a third term. Connected in some manner with this organization is a second committee which has a super patriotic name, such as the Committee for the Preservation of Constitutional Processes. I do not remember the exact name, however, it was similar to this. It is to be used as a fallback cover in the event that the first committee cannot accomplish its goal by constitutional means. This second committee, despite its name, is dedicated to keeping Mr. Nixon in office by any means, including a military coup by high-ranking officers. I heard this rumor on 3 October 1973. The man from whom I heard this story stated that he had recently been sounded out on a writing job for the second committee, and that there was apparently unlimited money behind it, as price was no object in salary discussions. He gave the above rumor as the strategy of the organization. We then entered into a discussion on the tactics which could be used to execute such a coup. During the course of the discussion, I was questioned as to the feasibility of the plan and asked whether I thought senior military men could be enlisted for such an effort. Upon reading this memorandum, I dropped everything and spent my time trying to convince other members of the press in Washington that this was a legitimate threat. What happened next was the stuff spy novels are made of, guns and car chases through Washington, as well as much more sophisticated spy games. Now, he goes on here and talks more, but due to the limited time left in this hour of the time, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit and try to give you the gist of this as quickly as I possibly can. Former CIA employees under direction of the White House were caught breaking into Democratic National Headquarters at the Watergate office complex in Washington. An informed intelligence source has told me the burglars were working on a tip that there was evidence that Democratic presidential candidate Senator George McGovern had accepted substantial illegal contributions from Fidel Castro. Nixon maneuvered successfully to keep an investigation of the incident relatively quiet until after the fall election. Then early in 73, the famed Senate Watergate hearings started. Nixon loyalists floated what is known in Washington as a trial balloon. They tipped off the local Washington media that a group of Americans who wanted Nixon to remain president for a third term or even longer had formed a group called the Committee to Repeal the 22nd Amendment. A third term is forbidden by the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. This group gained no immediate support in Washington, and so it quietly died after at most a week of local media mention. However, local Washington Nixon watchers began to worry privately that the Committee to Repeal the 22nd Amendment signaled something more ominous brewing under the surface. Now, we know that then the Agnew affair started, and a mass-market paperback book entitled The Glass House Tapes was published by Lewis Tackwood, who claimed that he was a member of a super-secret domestic intelligence unit of the Los Angeles Police Department, which was working on a plan to create a chaotic domestic political situation in the United States that would give President Nixon the justification for declaring martial law. Tackwood claimed that he helped set up a secret operation which would allow anti-war demonstrators to break onto the floor of the 1972 Republican Convention, then scheduled to take place in San Diego, just as Vice President Agnew began to speak. Tackwood and his accomplices would then cause a riot on the convention floor, with the demonstrators battling police. During the resulting uproar, the Vice President would be shot on nationwide TV to gain maximum impact. This incident would be followed by a wave of nationwide bombings for which the revolutionary left would openly take credit. In response, President Nixon would then have the justification to declare a state of national emergency and essentially suspend constitutional rights. Now, folks, as wild as this tale may sound, Tackwood's assertions are more believable today, given what happened to Agnew. He was certainly considered expendable by the White House. Although Nixon did not replace him on the ticket in 1972, Agnew resigned on October 10, 1973, after allegations of corruption and bribery suddenly surfaced. According to Senator Barry Goldwater's autobiography, Nixon never liked Agnew because his nomination had been forced upon him by the conservative wing of the Republican Party. Nixon then selected Gerald Ford to replace Agnew. As his vice president, Ford later granted Nixon a presidential pardon from any future prosecution. Former Nixon aide John Dean hinted that he may have been aware of this incident. In a December 1982 interview on ABC TV's After Hours, Dean said that he knew about these assassination plots, but said that he didn't know just what to make of them. I might add, folks, that all of these people are Freemasons. The idea in such an assassination strategy is, of course, to create a chaotic condition. This is usually considered a necessity in coup-making. At the peak of chaos, you move quickly and ruthlessly to seize power by force and kill your opposition during the turmoil. Although President Nixon's role remains uncertain, it is clear that some powerful group was trying to create a chaotic political situation in the United States in October of 1973, and I'm telling you the same thing is happening right now. The Marxist government of Salvador Allende was overthrown in Chile. Many observers in Washington feared that the covert expertise gained in Chile by the CIA would soon come home to rest in the United States. October 3, 1973. Colonel Still was asked how he and his military friends would feel about a military takeover of the U.S. government. 2 weeks later, Colonel Still circulated his memo to the FBI, top intelligence officials, and the press. October 20, 1973. Watergate Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox was fired by President Nixon for continuing his Watergate investigations. Attorney General Elliot Richardson and Deputy Attorney General Ruckelshaus were fired by Nixon for refusing to fire Cox. General Alexander Haig, Nixon's chief of staff at the time, testified before Congress at his confirmation hearings for Secretary of State on January 14, 1981, concerning these events. Although it went totally unnoticed by the assembled press corps, Haig dropped a bombshell that day concerning what has been called the Saturday Night Massacre. He revealed that the firings were no surprise to the participants, although they were to the rest of the world. Haig claims that Attorney General Richardson knew his fate at least a day in advance and that the firings were designed to prevent far more drastic scenarios. Haig described Attorney General Richardson's bargain with the devil in agreeing to the plan. Now, I must say in fairness to him that his agreement the day before to implement the plan, in fact, he helped to construct it, was an alternative to something that was far more drastic. Haig then explained what he meant by far more drastic. He asserted that some people in Washington were flirting with solutions which would have been extra-constitutional. Haig would later warn Archibald Cox's replacement, Leon Jaworski, about the dangers to the nation that Watergate posed. Jaworski then warned the grand jury that if they indicted the president, that if they did, Nixon might use force to keep himself in office. On June 1982, Watergate grand juror Harold Evans appeared in a segment of the ABC News magazine 2020 and said that Jaworski had warned the grand jury that if indicted, the president might have surrounded the White House with armed forces. Reporter Seymour Hirsch, in an August 83 interview of the Atlantic Monthly entitled The Pardon, wrote that Haig is known to have spread similar concerns inside the White House. Syndicated columnist Carl Rowan broke the story that President Nixon may well have been planning a military takeover of the government. On October 26, 1973, in a column in the Washington Star entitled, Has President Nixon Gone Crazy?, Rowan wrote, Those who wonder about the president's emotional balance have now begun to suspect that even in the face of a vote to impeach, he might try, as commander-in-chief, to use the military forces to keep himself in power. President Nixon met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff December 22, 1973, and tried to enlist their support in an extra-constitutional action to keep him in power. According to Seymour Hirsch, writing in the August 83 edition of Atlantic Monthly in an article entitled The Pardon, one of the Chiefs of Staff recalled Nixon's speech with alarm. He kept on referring to the fact that he may be the last hope, that the Eastern elite was out to get him. He kept saying, This is our last and best hope, the last chance to resist the fascists of the left. His words brought me straight up out of my chair. I felt the president, without the words having been said, was trying to sound us out to see if we would support him in some extra-constitutional action. He was trying to find out whether in a crunch there was support to keep him in power. August 27, 1974. On this date, the Washington Post, in a story entitled Military Coup Fears Denied, reported that Secretary of Defense James Schlesinger had taken special measures to protect the military chain of command should any illegal orders come from President Nixon. Defense Secretary James Schlesinger requested a tight watch in the military chain of command to ensure that no extraordinary orders went out from the White House during the period of uncertainty. Pentagon officials have said that Schlesinger never feared that a coup would be successful, even if attempted. Nevertheless, Defense Department officials said the word went out that no commanders of any forces should carry out orders which came from the White House or elsewhere outside the normal military channels. Department officials have confirmed that Schlesinger and General George S. Brown, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, discussed among themselves how they should be aware of any illegal orders being issued to military units outside the formal chain of command structure. July 1974, Secretary of Defense Schlesinger investigated how quickly the Army's 82nd Airborne Division could be brought to Washington, D.C. from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to counterbalance Marine contingents loyal to Nixon. Seymour Hersh, writer of the August 83 edition of the Atlantic Monthly, stated, Schlesinger began to investigate what forces could be assembled at his order as a counterweight to the Marines if Nixon, in a crisis, chose to subvert the Constitution. The notion that Nixon could at any time resort to extraordinary steps to preserve his presidency was far more widespread in the government than the public perceived in the early days of Watergate or perceives today. Hersh even suggested the probable military leader responsible for helping plan the coup attempt. When Richard Nixon was vice president under Eisenhower, he struck up a friendship with his military aide, Robert Cushman. In 1971, it was General Cushman who, as deputy director of the CIA, provided unauthorized CIA support to the illegal escapades of Watergate plumbers E. Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy. By June 1974, Cushman had been appointed as the Marine representative on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, one of the five most powerful military men in the nation. Schlesinger watched Cushman closely for several months. The article in Atlantic Monthly continues. Schlesinger continued to believe that Cushman, with his personal loyalty to Nixon, was a weak link in the new chain of command. He quietly investigated just which forces would be available to Nixon. The Marines, Cushman's troops, were by far the strongest presence in the Washington area. And there you have it, folks. I have been vindicated. I was absolutely correct, and what I told you was the truth about the Nixon coup. Now, on that broadcast also, Fletcher Prouty said that in Vietnam, that the war was being run by the CIA and the OSS. This could not have been true, no matter what, and L. Fletcher Prouty knows it, folks. That was intentional disinformation. You see, the OSS was disbanded totally and completely long before the CIA was ever formed. My message, folks, wake the sheeple. Empower the people. Save freedom for the world. We must live our lives by the truth. Good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you.